Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good Tuesday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. You are listening live to The Fan. Coming up at 3 o'clock, Commander starting wide receiver one, Terry McLaurin is on the show. Looking forward to that conversation today. Danny, we are back together in the air-conditioned studios on the Navy Yards Half Street. What's up, dude?
Yes, indeed, my friend. The kids are back in school. Until there's like, you know, 9 days off or various half days or things, but it is a glorious time. My time is my own again, at least a little bit once they're off to school, but it is fantastic. Good to be seen by you.
Danny loves his kids not being at his house.
Yes, when it's constructive, when it's the right thing. Again, it's hard to be an opponent to my viewpoint on this one. I don't care where you are on the spectrum. And listen, I agree with all of you, and you know who's bad is the other team. Kids should be in school. That's not a profound position. That's not a crazy, lunatic position. That's not some fringe thing where I'm trying to argue some uphill case. This is a good one. We can all kind of get on board with this one. It's a weekday. They got to go. Otherwise, it's just a mad scramble. It's devices. It's angry feelings. It's people annoyed. And my time isn't my own. Now it's the way it should be. I'll see them. I can't wait to see him. End of every day, it's the best. But during that day, get in that building.
My little guy's back at school as well.
Love it.
And thoroughly enjoying themselves into week two at this point. But you know who's not packing their lunch and getting back to work is Will Harris. He was cut today by the Commanders. We actually speculated on the show last week that he would be out at the safety position. And the reason that that happened was, it just, to me, became pretty obvious, frankly. He was not running special teams. First or second team drills very often. How do you keep a safety who's not a starter, and he was not a starter for much of camp because that was pretty frequently Nick Cross and Jeremy Reeves. And so if those two guys are your starters and then the competition behind them includes Tyler Owens, who's more athletic, more speedy, more physical, better on special teams, Quan Martin, who's got two picks and two preseason games and does more on special teams, how does Will Harris fit in here unless you keep six safeties? So I was kind of thinking he wasn't going to make it. I'm very surprised that they cut him as early as today. But maybe this is indicative, Danny, of them deciding that he was not going to be in. And because he's a 31-year-old veteran who's been around the NFL, you give him a head start before everyone else cuts everybody on Sunday to try to go find a home. But this will be, whoever he signs with coming up, will be his fourth team in 4 years. He was with the Lions for five seasons. And in that fifth season in 2023, plays in all 17 games, starts two. Then he goes to the Saints as a full-time starter. Then he goes to Washington, started nine games last year. So this will be team four in 4 years, which is telling.
It is. And the other part of it that I want to hold on to, like a dog with a bone, is remember last year, please. I beg all of you to remember last year when we heard a bunch that, well, losing Will Harris was a bridge too far. He's indispensable. The secondary can't go on. We don't have Will Harris. We can't communicate. We can't possibly figure it out. The whole thing's in disarray. This indispensable player, what's that? He's dispensable. He's been cut. And it ain't because they went and signed, you know, Troy Polamalu. Now, I know Nick Cross is new, and I'm excited about him. I think he's going to have a really good season. But they didn't go sign Ed Reed in his prime here. It's internal options like Jeremy Reeves and Quan Martin and Percy Butler and Tyler Owens that beat him out. So, I don't know. It's just something that I won't easily forget. But yeah, this is the right call in terms of a football thing, calling balls and strikes. He wasn't really going to be part of their plans. He was sixth out of a position that might keep five, maybe four, but you know, one guy's going to be kind of a hybrid, no ones and special teams players. Maybe they're more that than they are safeties that are in the mix, but he's outside looking in. So this certainly makes sense to me.
Yeah, that was definitely part of the rhetoric last year out of the building. I mean, there's no denying that. They made it seem like the injury to Will Harris and his lack of leadership that he could provide because he wasn't on the field was one of the biggest problems in the secondary and maybe more largely their defense. Hard to square that.
Yep, I don't believe that is what I'm saying.
Him having been the sixth guy. I think it's possible, though, that it is true. last year's roster construction was different. The scheme you were playing was different. They were asking different things from the safety position, especially in the old Dan Quinn defense, than you are in a Durante Jones defense. And so maybe he was a better fit for that. And they didn't have as many veterans. They didn't have a Cross, right? So you needed someone who could get everyone on the same page. You didn't have the green dot situation you do now. It was Bobby Wagner last year who was kind of in charge of everything in the front seven. This year, they've talked about maybe even occasionally having a DB handle some of those responsibilities because of how much guys are moving around and flying around and blitzing. And maybe there's a fatigue or a wear and tear there where guys are on and off the field at linebacker as part of a rotation. So maybe a DB wears that green dot. So a lot has changed. It's possible that he really was important. And if he was healthy, I'm sure they would have been a little bit better on defense. But it's not a great look for the camp of people that thought his injury was one of the biggest the team dealt with last year. My point was always the guy signed for $3 million. And you could say this about Nick Cross, too, who got a couple million bucks to come here, who I actually think is going to be exceptional.
Yeah, I like him.
And it's going to be one of the better signings they made this offseason because I think he's going to make a ton of tackles. Last couple of years, he's been 100-tackle safety. He's always around the ball. He's fast. He's violent. He's physical. But Will Harris, there wasn't a line of 11 teams bidding to get him. You know, it was fourth team in 4 years, and you got him for a couple million bucks.
Well, this is why when the just wait till Allegretti comes back and has two consecutive practices. Just wait. When once Allegretti's here, it'll be fine. Which guy? The journeyman guard that's now going to play center for, you know, it'll be his third start at center if and when he does. Come on. It's kind of my same feeling about that, where we're now, because he's missing, we act like this was the critical brick in the Jenga build. Right? This wasn't.
I mean, well,
this
he's is a lot better than anybody else they have, so both can be true. I mean,
I suppose
if Nick Allegretti was healthy, you wouldn't be as perilous right now at the center position, and things wouldn't be as ominous as they are. That doesn't necessarily mean that you've got a guy about to make $30 million like the Raiders do.
Yeah, the idea, though, that we can't live without it is again, just means your plan's bad. So it's a lot, to me, it was last year, a lot of the guys that they are counting on this year, Kinlaw, Payne, Luvu, Reeves, Sanristil, Amos, Quan Martin to a degree, they were all there. And, you know, the idea that, well, Will Harris is gone, so now we can't even, fill the function in defense, that doesn't hold water to me, especially given today.
I wonder how much of it, too, is they are way deeper at cornerback than they have been previously. And you're going to ask less, I think, of safeties playing and covering in the nickel. And you're more traditionally going to, you know, either be in the box, making plays, coming downhill in the run game, or playing some center field, which I never really thought was a strength of Harris's anyway. But they didn't have like an Amik Robertson necessarily a year ago, who's a super hands-on you physical nickelback, if you will. They did not have even like, I think Rasul Douglas, he dropped an interception that should have been right in his hands today at practice. But I actually think he's been excellent in camp. So I like their corners more. I actually think you could maybe keep an extra corner if they wanted to do that, which also makes safety a little bit more susceptible. But it was just interesting to me to see how surprised people were by that. But that's always a good reminder for me when I'm out at practice every day and you're watching, you know, who's running with the first team and the second team, and you're watching who's doing special team stuff or not, that you're in the bubble. Like, you feel like everyone's seeing what you're seeing or kind of has the same vibe you do, and that's just not how it goes. A lot of people are checking in every few days going, wait, that guy was a starter last year. He was a lock to be on the team, when it was clearly trending for about 2 weeks. Like, Will Harris was not going to be on the team. There was also a moment in the press conference today where Dan Quinn was asked, what player at camp has had the most impressive last couple of weeks? And I think the way Nikki Javala may have actually phrased the question was, what player at camp has surprised you or impressed you the most? And his answer was Quan Martin, which is a little bit surprising and strange to me. Because early in training camp, I got to say, like, I would not have had Quan Martin on a list like that. I think that is maybe related to the fact that he's got two picks in two preseason games, and like that result has been there very obviously to see him make plays.
Right.
He's probably finished camp strong in their film evaluation, I'm sure. But I wonder how much that was also just, they announced the Will Harris release like 25 minutes after that, and he wasn't at practice today. If that wasn't part of the
feels maybe calculated
domino effect,
yeah,
where he's like, okay, we're cutting Will Harris. I got a chance to single someone out. Let's talk about the confidence we have in the guy that made the team over him, Quan Martin, who is a bubble player that is now squarely in as potentially the fifth safety, because I actually think Owens is going to do so much on special teams, might play some defense, that maybe Martin's actually the last safety in, not Tyler Owens.
That's how I view it. But again, that's my own kind of Martin bias.
Did you see him blow up that running back
from
the
Lions? On the pass pro.
I love that. Like, you didn't have to do that. That man's got a family.
That's right.
It's just football.
Yeah.
The old, I'm not supposed to say his name anymore, but their old defensive coordinator, you know who I'm talking about?
Who, old Dust Up?
No, not that one. More recently.
Joe Witt?
No, him. Yep.
That one. Yeah.
But we don't say his name on the show.
Oh, sorry.
Anymore.
My fault.
Yeah.
Whose name don't we say?
A couple of them, apparently, because I forgot about old Dust Up. But arrive violently, that was his saying.
He did say that.
That was a Tyler Owens arriving violently moment.
That's right. He arrived violently. The ball was life, but he didn't get it on that play, but that was still fun.
If you blow a dude up like that, you have my attention, sir.
Yeah.
The way that we live is not for everybody.
Yeah, keep that clip close by. Because even though I'm not going to say his name on the show anymore, we can still play some of his clips because they're super fun.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not, all right? Because we're going to run and put our bodies on people in a violent manner.
Well, the only thing true about that was you're right. The way you play is not for everybody.
It is not for many people.
Like my eyes.
Because the ball is life.
Like people that like this team, it wasn't for them.
How much did they die last year? If the ball is life.
They're starving.
How much death was there?
I mean, dehydrated and starving in the desert, staring up at that hot sun.
If the ball is water and football games are deserts, we're cooked.
The canteen's empty.
We're just...
Them and the Jets are just dead.
Army crawling. The craziest stat in the history of the NFL, by the way. Most of you have probably heard this before. But last year, the New York Jets, in 17 games... did not intercept one pass.
That's not true.
Think about that.
One.
How is that possible?
One.
68 quarters. They did not intercept one pass as a team. And Washington tried their best not to, but they accidentally did a few times. The Jets successfully never intercepted one pass. The ball is life.
Again, I've never. Washington had eight. I don't remember eight. They picked off eight passes?
Eight.
You sure about that?
Mikey Sanders still had four by himself, I think. Or
I
close.
Guess.
He was made a couple plays on the goal line, I remember. But you know what I have noticed, if we want to go with a positive from the first few preseason games, and it's a result thing, not a process.
The turnovers
thing.
Are there.
They are generating some takeaways.
Yes.
They had the three picks of guys that won't be on the Miami Dolphins. I know it's backup quarterbacks, whatever, but they're making the plays.
Yes.
And then the second play... with starters on the field, or as many of them as were healthy, against the Lions' second team or whatever that was,
yep.
They get a sack fumble touchdown. So you're talking about two plays into your second preseason game, you've already got four takeaways.
Yeah. They forced the interception on the next drive. Like things are happening. The turnovers are there. Again, just have one leg to stand on. Do something instead of doing nothing. You gave up a lot of yards, you gave up a lot of points, and you didn't turn anybody over. Ladies and gentlemen, last year's Washington football team.
Real quick before we move on from some news and notes from camp today. So you heard Will Harris is out. Safety position looks like we've now figured out who's going to be in, who's going to be out. I thought this was interesting. I wanted to play this clip. Dan Quinn's press conference before practice today. I have not for one second considered the possibility that Adafe Owe wouldn't play in the opener, who's dealing with an injury and hasn't practiced in a couple of weeks. But it was kind of described as days, not weeks, with Adafe Owe. Similarly, when Trey Amos got hurt the first time, it was always so imminent that he was going to return that I haven't really properly calibrated that maybe he wouldn't be out there as their cornerback one against the Philadelphia Eagles and Devontae Smith. And today, in his press conference, John Keim asked Dan Quinn about those two guys and how sure Quinn is that they're going to be ready to start the season. And he was completely noncommittal in his answer. There's a couple reasons you would do that, but listen to the audio first.
Yeah, I'd say I'll have a better answer for that into next week, John, as we get ready for those practices. We're fortunate that we have, you know, that space in between. They're both working hard and making progress, but I don't know if I'd have a number to gauge it just yet. And so that would be kind of my time that I'll have a better sense.
That bothered me. And what I mean by that is that was the first time that I've gotten nervous, like, wait a second. Is Adafe Owe maybe not going to play against the Eagles in his debut with the team after getting $100 million? Wait a second. Is Trey Amos, who you're counting on as cornerback one, who's missed all of training camp, is this foot thing going to linger into September now? There's two possibilities here, and I want to see which one you kind of think this is. Number one is he could be in regular season injury update mode. I'm not going to tell you anything. And we know he is to some extent because he's not saying how much guys are going to play in preseason games. Kind of drags this out.
Yeah, they're doing that, yeah.
They're like pretending like they need to keep everything close to the vest. So it could be as simple as they know right now Oweh's going to practice middle of next week, but he's not willing to tell you yet. It's very possible, and I hope that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is, they actually might be 2-3 weeks away, or let's say 1.5-2 weeks away, which now puts you in jeopardy of missing week one. And I don't know which one it is, but both are on the table. What you could easily do, if you know for a fact that Oweh and Amos, from a timeline standpoint, are supposed to be back in time, two of your key starters, most important defensive starters,
yeah,
for the week one against the Eagles, you could just not make that a thing, not make that a story, and come out and say, yeah, those guys are totally expected to be ready for the start of the year. We got a lot of time between now and then. Still got a few weeks. We'll get them up to speed. We're not worried about that. And that's no harm, no foul. Why wouldn't you do that? Unless you're not sure that they
unless
will be
back. Unless it's dubious. Yeah, unless it's, ah, we'll know more later. Oh, no. So, again, it's not quite mid-teens nationals for me in terms of what they say about injuries. I just frankly don't believe and assume whatever the worst-case scenario is, I add a month to it. I mean, that's where they were at that point. The organization was doing a lot right. That was not one thing.
The Nats you're talking about.
The Nats. We're not quite there for this Local 53 just yet. But I'm now kind of starting to do that. I mean, guys have been day-to-day for the entirety of training camp, which I guess ended officially today, right? There's a preseason game left. There's a joint practice left. But the active training camp today is over. And there are guys that were supposed to be here a million times over that just simply haven't been. Al Grady practiced one time and had to go right back to the tent and hasn't been seen since. I mean, he's a ghost. A lot of these guys are. So I kind of am defaulting towards either they don't know, which happens. Injuries can be flighty and kind of hard to predict in certain cases. Or they are now, as you said, kind of in full regular season mode where their near futures are dubious.
I would always lean into, if I know a guy's going to be ready, especially in the preseason, it's not like you're giving away the answers in week four before a game. But this far out from the start of the year, I would just quell concerns, try to not make anything a story. And also with the injury stuff piling up around you right now, every answer is important because just the entire feel of it all right now, the mojo is not great because you've got 20-plus guys that aren't going to be participating.
Yeah, it feels like a bit of a mudslide right now. You can put a stop to that to
a degree. So you could just say, no, listen, guys. I know we got a lot of dudes banged up. It's affected our practice schedule. It affects what we're able to get done in Baltimore in the joint practice. Not ideal. No one's saying it is. But the only guys that are out for a really long time here are Laremy Tunsil and Johnny Newton. And otherwise, we got a pretty good beat on everything else, and guys are going to be back really early into the season. Let's not make this a bigger deal than it is. And I would just pour the cold water on it, ALS Ice Bucket Challenge style. But Dan Quinn doesn't seem wanting to do that. And the question, I guess, is it more stylistically that he's just not going to give that information? Or might they not know or fear that it is possible that those guys are not back for the first week of the season? And I hadn't really considered that until today. So that, to me, was a bummer to not hear him come right out and go, yeah, Oweh's going to play in week one. Yeah, we think Amos is going to be back. They haven't really updated those guys. The other one we don't have a timeline on yet that now I'm interested in after what he said today was Bill. So I was at the practice Thursday before they flew to Detroit.
Yep.
And if you remember, I told you, I saw him come up lame. He kind of grabbed his leg. And I thought it was like quad, hammy. I'm not a person that knows leg muscles. Maybe groin. But then he was like limping off the field a little bit. And it was obvious enough that I said there's no way he's going to play Saturday because you wouldn't push him for a preseason game that you don't care that much about. But I also don't know, is that going to feel better in 3 hours or is that a month? And we don't know yet.
Right.
But he said today, Quinn did, that Bill basically isn't doing anything this week. So that gets you through the Ravens practice tomorrow. No Bill. That gets you through the preseason game Friday. He wouldn't be able to play in that.
Right.
And now you're done with all of the ramp up.
And you got 2 weeks until the game.
It's just the 2 weeks of game prep. And Bill is easing back in at that point. Rashad White's already been hurt. Hadn't really been doing a whole lot. Jeremy McNichols is hurt.
That's another one. It's very, he's away. Yeah.
That one, at least they've said, is weeks, not days.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the only ones they've said that about, though. He's more in the Mariota. It's like,
yeah, so that means months.
The two guys that are out months. Then it's Mariota and McNichols are the weeks. And then everyone else we thought was days. But
it's been a month.
Kind of turned into that.
Yeah.
And who's the other guy with Oweh we were talking about? Let's turn it. Amos. Let's turn into that. It's a lot to keep straight, man. There's just a lot. For a team that decided, like, we're not going to push it that hard so that we can keep everybody healthy, they got a lot of guys that aren't healthy.
I know. And it's one of those, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of things, where if you actually ramp up as hard maybe as you might need to. You might have more of these. You might have more of these kinds of stories. The flip side is they seem to be happening anyway without the ramping up. So I kind of don't, you know, there's no good answer here. To me, it seems like, given the data we've got now, this is hindsight, I would have gone, you know what? Our guys, for whatever reason, are dropping like flies. We have to get whoever's ready actually ready. So maybe let's go a little bit harder. But again, I understand like where you're going, we need all these guys to practice. We need the bodies. We need the reps. And we can't do it because we can't ramp up the intensity because guys are getting hurt and missing not just days like we thought, but weeks. Because that's really what this is. If you tell me day to day, I expect day to day. And it hasn't been on a number of these guys. That's what's frustrating.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he doesn't want to give timetables at this point. At the start of the conversation, I'm kind of giving him some guff because he's not telling you when guys come back. And you're going, well, if you tell me, you better tell me right. And maybe that's the problem.
Maybe it's that.
They've been wrong enough that he's like, all right, guys, I'm done with this. You know, I'm not going to be guessing anymore because it's made me look bad. What do we feel best and worst about with this roster? Let's get into that next, and we can open up the phones on this as well. You guys are starting to see the roster come into shape. You're seeing some of the injuries and clusters that they've had as well. We've seen what probably will be the last of the starters in the preseason, one more joint practice against the Ravens tomorrow. What area of this team do you feel best about, and what do you feel worst about? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
He's Danny, I'm Grant, this is The Fan. Thanks for making this show part of your day. Always means a lot. Commanders trying to push through a bunch of injuries piling up at camp. They've got maybe their most important day of the summer tomorrow at Owings Mills. They're taking on the Ravens in a joint practice. If you thought the Dolphins was a nice couple-of-hour test, now you stack up against Baltimore, good on good, and that's a Ravens team that should be playoff-bound, and you're going to find out, especially with a lot of their key players that just aren't able to practice, what kind of depth you have and how you're going to look when you're playing one of the really good teams you're going to open the season against. First few weeks, Philly, Dallas, Seattle. The Ravens are kind of in that company, I would say.
Yeah, last year such a down year, but the optimistic talk, certainly. You add Trey Hendrickson to that group. That's probably going to help you, one would think. But they are stout on defense, and you know it's an offense that went through some things last year, but they've kind of retooled. Yeah, that's a good group, and this is critical. I don't know a way around that because of how little they did this preseason. We talked about this ad nauseum the day you were out. You actually came on and talked about it correctly. Their starting offense played three plays, and those three plays were awful. One blown-up play that went for an incompletion, a throwaway, a kill, a sack, and a give-up run. I don't know what the play script said. I don't know what the IHOP menu said, but it certainly wasn't give-up run on 3rd and 20. And then they punted and said, that's enough. So, cool, I guess. It's a first-round TKO, and that's our offense. That's the work we're going to see. So you got a lot of work to do here, and this one's really important.
What do you feel best about with this team and worst about with training camp having unofficially ended today? I say that because, Danny, they kind of broke down.
Yeah.
Ended camp. It was their last practice in Ashburn with the group. They head to Owings Mills tonight. They're going to practice tomorrow. Then they'll have the preseason game in Baltimore on Friday. And then they're going to have cutdown day this weekend. So the next time they practice on the grass at their team facility, they'll have cut from 90-plus to 53 active 17 practice squad. So today was effectively the end of training camp. I would say the thing I feel the best about, I actually think their wide receiver position in the wake of the Stephon Diggs acquisition is really good. And they're going to end up cutting at least one, if not two guys that will catch passes in the NFL this season. I think Van Jefferson right now is the odd man out because I'm keeping 7. He'd be the 8th guy. But if they only keep 6, it's very possible that Luke McCaffrey either gets traded or is released and wouldn't be the 7th guy. Or maybe there's a surprise. Maybe it's De'Ami Brown or something like that. But regardless of who they cut on the back end of their wide receiver room, those guys will play in the league this year. They've even got guys on their practice squad, like Jaden Bradley, who you saw shine with a couple catches against the Lions. Jacoby Jones, who's had a pretty good preseason. I think those guys can play in this league and could catch passes in Washington this year. So I really, really like what they've done at wide receiver. And I think the Diggs signing changed everything for them, pushing everyone down. the depth chart during a time where they were all having really good camps anyway.
Yeah, I agree. And I would actually focus for my thing I feel most positive about just on their top two wide receivers. I think the rest of the guys are complementary role players. It's like you have a guy on a basketball team that can score 20 a game. Well, can he do it on a good team? The answer is probably not. They make a lot of those guys where you probably have to sacrifice a little bit. I don't want Antonio Williams or Treylon Burks or Dalmi Brown or Jalen Lane or Luke McCaffrey to be my number two. That means you don't have a good number two. It means you have a guy that's probably, you know, outkicking his coverage there. Their 1-2 punch now is really, really good. It's as good as anybody's. And I think that's now, I don't want to call it essential because there's different ways to skin a cat, but that's now a nice advantage that they're going to have. Most weeks you're going to have a matchup that you favor, that you like. And I've always liked Terry McLaurin. He's not, and it's okay. It's not an insult. He's not Puka Nacua, Ja'Marr Chase, or JSN, or Amon Ross St. Brown. They only make a few of those guys. Like, true, honest-to-goodness, number one, no matter which team he's on, he walks in the locker room. That's a good player, top half of the league, certainly, but not necessarily a 1,400-yard bell cow like these guys that are going to the first round of your fantasy draft. So to have a complimentary 1A, call him a 2, whatever you want, a guy that on a down year playing just over half the snaps went for 85 catches and 1,000 yards, something McLaurin's only done once other time in his career, that's a major upgrade to me. So I do feel the best about that.
A big portion of the conversation I had with Terry McLaurin today, and you're going to hear that lengthy interview at 3 o'clock coming up on Grant and Danny here on The Fan, a big part of it was the relationship with Diggs, how he compliments him and Diggs compliments McLaurin and how they're going to play together in this offense. I think people will get a lot out of that. But yeah, those two guys in tandem as a 1-2 punch, that's one of the 10 best duos at the wide receiver position in football.
100%.
So it's a far cry from everybody kind of suggesting they didn't have enough or they weren't going to have enough. When you go get Diggs, that changes. And then the depth, you know, 3 to 7, I would stack up with most teams. When you talk about multiple mid-round picks and a guy that's had a couple 600-yard seasons in the league and Dyami Brown, who had $10 million given to him by a club last year coming off of, you know, a postseason where he was really, really good for Washington. So there's lots of talent on the depth chart there. What do you feel worst about? I guess it's pretty easy. It's the offensive line or pass pro. So maybe we could go off the grid a little bit.
Yeah, so I mean, that is my answer. But just to dwell on it for a second before we move, and I didn't know it would be like this. And that's kind of the part that I don't know.
What, the O-line?
I didn't know that it was going to be this bad. That, right now, like you go, okay, yeah, they're going to miss Tunsil. That's obvious. It took their ceiling, made it a little bit lower. But when we got that PFF ranking, that they're the 32nd ranked O-line out of 32, I think reflexively, people are like, no. Because individually, look, I like Chris Paul. He was pretty good last year. He was fine. Sam Cosmi's a really quality player. Arrow's trending up for Connolly. I don't know what's going on. But it looks like everybody's regressed or nobody's met each other or something else.
Can I ask, are you basing this on the two plays in Detroit? Or what?
This
when you
is,
said you didn't think it would be this bad or it looks like, so is that based on just the two plays?
Partly. That's one small data point.
Yeah.
They couldn't push anybody around against Miami at all in the joint practice where it's like, yeah, everything, this is cool. Well, they couldn't run it all in the interior. Oh, okay. That's something I'm taking notice of. And their starters, that offensive line, as we have the starters, of course, Allegretti, because he's practiced for 5 minutes, but the guys that are going to play couldn't move against the starting defense of the Miami Dolphins. So it's that plus the small sample of plays. Now you got rankings. So again, this isn't definitive. They could come out and be the Hogs 2.0 in the regular season. But given what we've got and you know, the limited information we're going off of, it's worse than I thought at this point.
Yeah, the run game against Miami for sure was not good. I thought they shredded them in the passing game in that practice for whatever it's worth. The center position's definitely very high on my list.
Mm-hmm.
I won't go O-line abroad, but I'll just say center is something that I do worry about. The other thing I would say is, I think there's a time in the not too distant future, hopefully only a couple games in, when they're loaded at the edge spot. But at least to start the year, if Odafe Owe is not available, and again, I'm just going off Quinn today, kind of no selling the question and saying they won't know more until next week. We already know Dorrance Armstrong is suspended for that game.
Yep.
So you have no Armstrong, no Owe. Kalavon Chaisson has also not been practicing. Now, he wasn't asked about today, so I guess I'm not as worried about him, but that's just because the question hasn't been asked yet. But he hasn't practiced in, what has it been, 2 or 3 weeks? You know when he got hurt, actually? It was the joint practice against the Dolphins. Is that 2 weeks ago Wednesday, tomorrow?
I think, right.
Or is that 3 weeks ago? I guess that'd be 2 weeks because it was a preseason game. But he has not practiced then in 2 full weeks. That's your number two pass rusher. Dorrance Armstrong's your number three. So that's your top three edges, meaning Joshua Josephs, who I really like, really good camp, solid rookie prospect, but he's the guy that bit way too hard on the read option that allowed Dobbs to look like Lamar Jackson going for a 50-yard touchdown?
Yeah.
That's your top edge all of a sudden. Like, how deep down the depth chart are you with him and Javonte Jean-Baptiste? You're starting edges or something going into the season if those other guys aren't ready? So that's something, hopefully, that by next week I feel better about because guys come back. But right now, this second, there's a chance, I guess, that your top three pass rushers on the edge in this new defense are not playing in week one until we get an update saying they will.
Indeed, yeah. And again, this it goes to the thing I feel worst about, which is injuries. Somehow it's happening again. I mean, the last year, it was the tale of camp. It was the tale of August that, yeah, these guys will be fine. Eventually it'll work out. This is good. And it just never got better. In fact, it got worse as things progressed.
Let's go to Sean in Winchester on the fan. What's up, Sean? How are you?
Man, guys, thanks for taking my call. No, that dress rehearsal thing from Detroit, I don't know what that was. And we were all banking on Dan Quinn, and I like the guy. I like him as a coach. But this whole past two off seasons, it seems like these injuries. Why do I can't remember off seasons where there's this many injuries that are like, you know, these are conducive to our season coming up. You know, I want to see. It seems like we're hosting a bunch of paper champions, a bunch of weaklings, and that doesn't. We're playing Philadelphia, the Cowboys, and then the Seahawks, and no, that doesn't work out to us. I want to see a parade. I want to see a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? And for them to be so finicky about, you know, who's playing and who's not, and no, it doesn't work. Something's wrong.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you. If you're going on a diet, you know, you and I have gone on these programs where you got to eat nothing and you got to exercise and do all this stuff. If you get on the scale and you're down a bunch of pounds, you can justify it and keep doing it. Great. Yeah. No problem. If I'm going to baby my way through training camp and not wear pads two straight days and not play anyone in the preseason games and just every turn choose prioritization of health, that's fine if everybody's healthy. But when you get to the finish line and you already have two dozen guys that are dealing with something,
yeah,
you almost need to go back and go, are we sure that was the best way forward?
Yeah. Is our process working? Because right now I would say no.
It didn't seem to. So many guys are hurt. The thing you were trying to avoid is exactly what happened. 800-636-1067. Terry McLaurin joins the show in 20 minutes at 3 o'clock. That'll be must listen. What do you feel best about? What do you feel worst about? Plus, Cade Cavalli is the real deal. I want to get into that next on G&D.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
One ball, two strikes, two out and nobody on. He's into the windup, the kick and the pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Back to the breaking ball. Strikeout number 7 for Cavalli. And a 1-2-3 top half of the sixth inning.
Nats starting pitcher and ace righty Cade Cavalli pitching like a number one continues to shine down the stretch in what is a lost season now. The 28-year-old, fully healthy, former first-round pick, was 22nd overall, chosen in 2020. Dealt with a bunch of injuries and is finally coming to his own now with health. He's got a 1.84 ERA over his last 7 starts, a 2.89 ERA over his last 15 starts, and for the season, he is a 12-game winner with a 3.2 earned run average. How about this, Danny? I think this is the best Cavalli stat I got for you. 26 of his 28 starts this year, he's allowed 3 or fewer runs.
Yeah, I got that from the old game notes last night when I was doing the postgame show. Remarkable what's happening. 7-1 with a 1.98 ERA over his last 8 starts. And you touched on it, 26 of 28. That means whatever percentage that is, 95% of the time. No meltdown, no four run, you know, no grand slam homer, no big inning, no, nothing crazy happening against you over the course of a start. The idea here is to give your team an excellent chance to win, and that's exactly what's happening. And he's going deeper into games, he's getting stronger as the year goes on. This is remarkable. We're watching it right in front of our eyes.
He has thrown 9 consecutive quality starts, 5 for 5 in the month of August, and he had 4 in a row to end July. From the 12th on, right before the All-Star break. So 9 consecutive outings, six or more innings, three or fewer runs. And in fact, in 11 of his last 12 starts, he is a walking quality start at this point, just getting deep into the game. And as you said, giving the team a chance. But there have been some gems in there. The one-hit shutout outing, I covered him as a postgame that day, 10 strikeouts, 8 innings, and he almost threw a no-hitter against the Cubs. Had the 6 shutty, 3 hits, 11 strikeouts against the Rangers. Didn't miss as many bats, like not quite as dominant with the stuff against the Rockies. But the ERA just keeps coming down. It was at one point, at the start of this stretch, I mean, he had an ERA in mid-June over 4.
Yep.
But when he began this stretch of 9 straight quality starts, it was 3.83. So it's down almost 0.6 runs in that time. He's got a legitimate shot, if he can continue to throw well, to finish with an ERA in the 2s, which nobody around these parts has done this side of Scherzer and Strasburg.
Again, pretty remarkable. A guy I like a lot, Mackenzie Gore, who was dealt before this season, he would go the opposite track at this point in the year, right? Where you have enough starts, you've accumulated 20, 21, 22. Cade's up there at 28, by the way. He's made taking the ball every fifth day. Where Gore all of a sudden, second half, would swoon, would either get tired or the fatigue would set in or some sort of delivery thing. Who knows? And I'm not ripping Mackenzie Gore, but it's just, again, as evidence, he's getting stronger as he goes. He is a horse at this point. And I was there last night. I had the great seats there to take my son and one of his buddies sitting up close and personal. And this wasn't A-plus Cavalli either. That's kind of the best part about it to me is I think of Scherzer, I think of some of the great pitchers that have been here for – you know, a third of your starts, you've got your electric stuff and anything you call is going to, you know, miss a bat and you're outstanding. He's had a couple of those starts and you could tell when those are happening. That one hit shutout kind of to your point, or one hit rather allowed in 8 innings to your point. And there are other starts though, where you may not have it. He's fighting a little bit. He's fidgeting around. He's kind of shrugging his shoulders some and kind of looking for some comfort on the mound. Doesn't have a great feel for some of the pitches. Still 2 solo homers. That's the damage. Over 6 innings, gives his team a chance to win, and finally they do break out, scored a million runs last night after being no-hit for 4 innings. But it's a blast watching this guy turn into this, okay, my fastball's getting hit, so what do I do about it? Well, I now am able to snap a knuckle curve for a strike. My cutter moves in really good ways. The changeup is becoming more of a weapon for him.
But he's setting everything up. To me, it's the curveball and the sweeper. You know, 16 swings and misses for him yesterday. He only touched 99 twice, by the way, which is funny to say, but there are a lot of starts where that's a...
Yeah.
8, 9, 10 times, right? So the velocity, the arm maybe not as lively or wasn't in its like feeling maybe the way it normally does after a Red Bull before a start, but he was still able to go out there and just shove. And the curveball he threw 35 times, right around 38% up, 10% from his normal amount of times this season, threw a combined like 45 breaking balls and sweepers and did a good job with the fastball because that pitch occasionally gets hit pretty hard by lefties, but he's done a much better job in recent starts avoiding some of that damage as well. Let's go to Chris in Hyattsville, who was waiting to talk about the Commanders areas where he feels really good and not as good going into the season. What's up, Chris? How are you?
Well, can I chime in on Cade Cavalli real quick?
Be quick, because we only got a minute in the hour.
Yeah, so as you said, Grant, I think the biggest thing here is there's been a considerable increase in his usage of breaking pitches, particularly the sweeper slash slider, and that has been dominant in recent weeks. So I think the next step for him is to get a little bit better command and whiff rate on his fastball, and then he will become like potentially an elite ace in the league.
Yeah, like a number one.
Like an honest to goodness, yeah.
Like an all-star, right. Yeah, for sure.
On the Commanders, I am now most confident. I am more confident in this offensive skill position group than I have been since the beginning of the Dan Quinn era. You've got legitimate studs, veterans, accomplished players in McLaurin and Diggs. I feel good about the running back room, and obviously we all feel good about Jaden, at least his ceiling. I know everybody's concerned about the offensive line, but I am sensing a general lack of leadership and command of the defense at the linebacker position. There's tons of raw athleticism, but there's no Ray Lewis, Bobby Wagner type, at least the green dot guy that I see right now that is putting people in the right place. There's no London Fletcher on the squad. Who is going to be that guy? I don't. It may take weeks or months for that person to emerge.
That's a really smart point. Huh. Thanks, as always, Chris. It's a good phone call. I wonder how much of that is. Their green dot's not been on the field in the 2 preseason games that he and everybody else has watched. That's Frankie Louvu. He is that guy for them this year. So if your point is, I don't know if I've seen that yet, like, Louvu, we're talking about, you know, seeing him for 3 seconds to this point.
Yep.
my guess is he's going to have to play that role. But that is a question with Leo Chanel, new defense, coming over here for the first time. Sonny Styles is going to learn on the fly here and get baptized in week one by the Eagles.
Indeed.
Like, it's the opposite of a year ago where they lacked speed. They lacked any kind of athleticism.
Veteran they had.
Exactly.
Yeah. Savvy they had.
Guy that would get you lined up right and be in the right spot all the time? Check. All the physical stuff? Nope. And he's not wrong, but I think his point is they got all the other stuff now and they lack the thing that they had last year. So it'll be interesting to see. I'd rather be in this position where I've got freak athletes.
With a learning curve than have a smart guy with a low ceiling.
Who just can't make the plays.
Yeah.
But knows what play is coming. That doesn't help me very much. But it is an interesting thing to follow and a pretty good call there. Thanks, as always, to Chris. All right, next, Terry McLaurin. Caught up with him at practice. He was just fantastic, as always. Just a great reminder of him being one of the truly awesome people in D.C. sports. Not just players for the Commanders, but one of the great human beings in D.C. sports. You'll hear from him next on G&D.
Fantasy football season is back, baby. Matthew Berry here, and my podcast, Fantasy Football Happy Hour, has the sleepers, busts, and starts and advice you need to win your league. So listen and follow Fantasy Football Happy Hour wherever you get your podcasts.